you know, only like two or three of you, like usually it's like 20% of your working staff is there, and then the rest of them are working from home. So like there's definitely ways to make it happen. And there's like hand sanitizer fucking everywhere. So like they could definitely make it work.
I think we should start this week. Drew Brees should work from home.
Yeah, I think so too.
Just Drew Brees on Sunday.
On Sunday, yeah. It's Taysom Hill's day at the office on Sunday.
You can even like pipe him into the headset for Taysom Hill.
Drew Brees would absolutely love that role.
Welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is Brian, joined by Brad and John. And damn, does it feel good to say that again. Brad, you weren't listening. You may not have been listening last week, but I almost said Brad and John when you weren't here.
Oh, yeah, I totally listened to the show.
There was a very pregnant pause when he started the introduction.
Yeah, it's like, it's like, you know, one of those habits, I guess, is the best way to put it. I was going to say reflex, but it's more of a habit. But yeah, Brad, how are you doing? Glad to have you back.
I am great. How are you?
Good. And I also did talk shit on you last week, so I hope you take that under advisement the next time I miss. John, how are you?
Just great, Brian. Thanks great. For asking.
Yeah. I always like to ask. Got to check in on your fellow man these days.
And you know they're always going to be forthright and honest whenever you say "How are you?" Mm-hmm. They're just going to be like, "Oh, you know what, man? I'm going through it right now." Nobody ever just automatically says "good."
Living the dream. That's my.
I think if anybody says "living the dream," it's probably a cry for help.
Yeah, that means probably. Yeah, you should probably slip them a therapist phone number if they say "living the dream."
If they say "living the dream," they just mean life sucks, but they're trying not to say that in public.
If someone says "fine" or like, but yeah, "fine" or "living the dream," it's like, oh boy.
Yeah, whenever I ask someone how they're doing, and they're like, "I'm okay." I'm like, "No, you're not. Shut up."
Yeah, I think okay is like the bottom of the spectrum. Like, "I'm doing great" is like I'm actually doing well, and if you say "I'm okay," it means like I feel like shit.
It's okay.
Yeah, it goes the other way too. Like if you say "fantastic," you're obviously lying. Like no one is ever fantastic.
It's like a what's that? A parabola? The like
yes.
Hyperbole?
No, the shape.
No.
That was a nerd joke, Brian.
Sorry. I didn't bring my spreadsheets to this podcast.
It's not a spreadsheet, man. Remember your algebra too.
I don't. Oh God, I didn't mute my phone. I'm sorry. What was I going to say?
Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
A parabola is a symmetrical open plane curve formed by the intersection of a cone with a plane parallel to its side. Duh.
You definitely looked that up on Google.
No, I read this side of that from memory.
Uh-huh.
Who doesn't know that?
Exactly. I did at one point in time, but I haven't needed to know what a parabola is in like 10 years. So anyway, yeah, so the Panthers played a football game this past weekend, and they lost. I won $250. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for
everybody.
Support.
It was thinking that when the Panthers lost. They're like, you know what? Good for Brian.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. That was the first. I almost wrote that in the game recap.
Yep.
You know, the Panthers may have lost today, but Brian won. And that's really what matters.
That's exactly what matters. See,
did
like
you
do I said,
what we
Brad,
talked about in the post game show? Did you get him to buy a Tahir Whitehead jersey instead?
I did not. I could have done that, but I just decided I'd take the money because honestly,
well, I probably would have done the same thing.
I mean, I'm just going to take the money and give it to somebody else, so it's fine. You know.
Oh, you're going to put it in my futures account, right?
Yeah, yeah, your oil futures
okay,
account.
Cool, cool,
yeah.
Cool.
Yep. So, the Panthers lost to the Bears, who are what 5-1 now. Pretty good.
Yeah, they're 5-1.
They're the dumbest 5-1 team ever, though.
They have a really good defense, though. We did see that on Sunday. I mean, even though the Panthers' red zone offense has been shit three of the last 4 weeks, we saw a very good defense there. Brad and I obviously recapped our thoughts on the game right afterwards in the B&B reaction show, which you should go check out. But John did not get to do that. So, John, why don't you give us some of your quick thoughts on what happened?
I don't have a lot to add. So, I said, like I said, the Bears are stupid. They're 5-1, but I feel like, and we talked about it last week, how their advanced metrics and stuff are really bad. And then I forgot that they lost because DeAndre Swift dropped a wide open touchdown on the goal line with like 5 seconds left in week one. So they had that. They had the Falcons collapse. They barely prevented Daniel Jones from driving down the field to beat them. And then the game on Sunday. So I don't know. I don't think they're good. But part of that's their defense being good. So their offense can look terrible and they still win. Which I guess
my favorite thing about the Bears, and this is including their win over us, which was by a touchdown, their point differential is plus 12.
Yeah.
And they're 5-1.
Yeah. That makes point differential is usually
five,
like a better.
It was plus 5 before kickoff on Sunday.
That's the advantage of having a good defense is that you can win close games a lot of times. So, you know.
Also, a good illustration of why football can be really stupid in the sense that, because like the season is so short, relatively speaking, that the sample size is small. And so there's a lot of room for variance and random luck to where the Bears catch a couple lucky breaks and all of a sudden they're 5-1 instead of 3-3. And everybody's like, oh, the Bears 5-1, but they're not really 5-1 good.
Yeah. I mean, they would be 4-2 if Tom Brady knew what fourth down was.
Yeah. Three and three if DeAndre Swift had hands attached to his arms.
Fifth down Tom has been my favorite nickname that I don't know if I coined it, but I definitely said it before I saw someone else say it on Twitter. So
it was an original idea to you.
Yes. Therefore, I am smart and funny, and you all should appreciate me.
The only thing, and Walker, I don't know. Yeah, Walker talked about it in the Monday Morning Optimist, I think. The Panthers punted once somehow, and that means we punt the least in the NFL now because the Packers punted a lot, and they were the only team that punted more or punted less than the Panthers before this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, a punt is better than a turnover, but sure.
Yeah, that's punts one of those stats. That's one of those stats that you have to actually look into it because you can say we've punted fewer times than anybody else, but I mean. We only punted once because we had turnovers. We went for it on fourth down. We missed a field goal.
There
are all kinds of other crazy stuff.
Yeah, there is. There is a bit of a like correlation. Like it's obviously if you're a bad offense, you punt more. So it's not like a measure like we're the best offense in the league, but I do think it shows that, you know, we're moving the ball relatively consistently and we're being aggressive. And not being doing the whole like run punt or run pass punt thing that we used to do all the time, and a lot of teams will do.
It correlates with efficiency. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, it was nice to see us go for it on fourth down, other than times when we had to.
Yeah, it's what, three times?
It was three times. Yeah,
and then one of them was like, and they weren't like gimmies, like oh, fourth and inches on the 40, you have to fourth and three in field goal range and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's how a team that probably shouldn't be 3-3 should be playing to try and win games. So I'll take it.
The other thing that I thought was cool that came out of this game, it's not for the Bears game directly, but it's a result of the Bears game. Panthers have two wide receivers that are top 10 in receiving yards. Did you guys know that?
I did know that.
I did know that, yes.
It's Robbie Anderson.
Curtis Samuel is also not one of them because he sucks.
Yeah, he's so bad that he was inactive on Sunday.
Yeah, terrible.
Robbie Anderson, as we all predicted, is second in the NFL in receiving yards behind DeAndre Hopkins. And then DJ Moore's 10th.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a shame they haven't won more football games, but, you know, it's pretty good.
I mean, it's exactly what we expected, though. It's like, oh, the offense is good. The defense was, they were better on Sunday, partly because the Bears have a bad offense, but the all competent. But
special shout out to Rasul Douglas as well. He played very well during that game.
Yeah, he played. I like 98%. He played all but one snap, I think, on defense. And I know part of that's because Dante Jackson's hurt, but he's basically become like the number one corner after we got picked up off the street, like what, 4 days, like 6 days before the season started?
Yeah, he actually didn't. He wasn't active in week one because he didn't even practice with the team yet. That's how late he was picked up. So that's been quite a find.
Quite a find. And do we want to break down the, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot of injury news, but I will say Justin Burris is on IR. That's not good for the defense.
Oh, no, there was plenty of injury news today, or yesterday, if you're listening to this.
I mean, when it comes out, yes.
I guess. I mean, those players aren't as important as not starters.
Oh, they're important.
But, okay.
Everyone is important. It takes a team.
Okay. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to offend you there.
Yes. Justin Burris was placed on IR because he got hit in the ribs. Are his ribs broken, or is it a bruise, or they haven't really said. They just said ribs.
Most likely broke a rib if he's out for 3 weeks at least.
Which is what I said when we did the reaction show. Shout out to me. Keith Kirkwood is also on injured reserve. He re-injured his clavicle, so the Keith Kirkwood experience lasted all of 1 day for Carolina. And we added
the Keith Kirkwood Robinson. Experience was a thing.
It is.
So, it was. Well, it was, yeah.
It was. And see, that's Curtis Samuel's fault, too, because if he wouldn't have faked an injury, Keith Kirkwood probably wouldn't have played and he wouldn't have got hurt. So, for all you Curtis Samuel haters, you can blame that on him, too.
Are clavicle injuries just always re-injured?
I would imagine so.
It feels like every time someone comes back from a clavicle injury in like 4 weeks or whatever, that they always re-injure it.
I guess it's like it really should be a 6 to 8 week injury, but nobody wants to admit that. And
it's like, I think it's like, because you can't really test like if your bone is strong enough. You just have to like look at it on x-rays and stuff. And I mean, I'm guessing, I don't know, I'm not a doctor,
but I mean, you're getting hit with a helmet. So
yeah, I feel like it's one of those things where it, like imaging or whatever makes it, it's like, oh, you know, you got all your strength back and it looks good on imaging, so you're fine. But it's like, not ready for impact yet, but you can't really see that. I don't know.
The best way to test a bone for impact injuries is to punch it. I've learned.
Yeah, and I'm sure the medical staff probably doesn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm sure they used to.
I mean,
do that.
We're just lucky that we've graduated from them just like taking tobacco and spitting it on it and like rubbing it and shit, putting leeches on it or whatever. But we signed, what's his name? Sean Chandler from the Giants to take Burris's spot. And we also brought Kenny Robinson up from the practice squad. So we brought two safeties in after losing one, and those two probably will equal what Burris was bringing to the team in terms of value. So, you know, we traded one good player for two mediocre ones. And we also added Sam Tecklenburg, who is an offensive lineman, because we've lost how many offensive linemen now to COVID?
Schofield right now? Is one of them.
Schofield and somebody else. Tyler Larson. We had to bring in an offensive lineman for depth. And then we also signed four players to the practice squad. We signed Josh Hawkins, Mike, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, Panasiuk, however that's pronounced. Panasiuk,
I guess. We'll just call him Mike.
Mikey.
Yeah,
we'll never see him on the field, Mike. Greg Roberts and Mike Warren. Oh, we have to call – well, we'll call him Mike Warren because we have two Mikes. But, yeah, we had a lot of stuff today or yesterday.
Well, I'm sorry, I was busy, so I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I don't think, but none, I think Burris is the only real impact.
Yeah, really, Burris is the only thing. I don't even know, other than Curtis Samuel being out, we don't really need Kirkwood anyway. We already have, what, 7 wideouts on the roster.
And Seth Roberts is a good.
And Seth Roberts is there. I mean, I don't even know why we kept Kirkwood, because we have Seth Roberts.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that's why we had Seth Roberts.
Like the same player.
Yeah, they're basically the same guy. So,
do you have anything else about the Panthers before I go around the NFL? Because I had something tangentially related. Well, opposite end of the spectrum as the Panthers and their punting
everybody. Yeah, go for it. I don't think we have anything else.
So the Jets and Dolphins played a great game.
They sure did.
Did you see how bad it was in terms of what I was just talking about? They punted, between the two of them, they punted 17 times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the only thing I know about that game is Tua got to play.
Yeah,
it was they went, the teams combined for 3 for 26 on third downs. One of those was the last third down where Tua was in. He completed a pass. So before that, they were 2 for 25 is a game on third downs. I think that was the only one the Dolphins converted to. And then, yeah, they punted 17 times.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
That's what you want to see when you have two games in the 4 o'clock window, weighs one of them having 17 punts between the Dolphins and the worst team we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And speaking of Tua, I thought you guys saw him on the field after the game, right? I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
On the Jets side of things, have you seen all the Greg Williams and Adam Gase stuff?
No, I've not.
I've seen tons of things. Depends on what you're talking about.
Greg Williams, in his interview with press on Thursday or something of last week.
What the hell was that?
What?
Sorry, go ahead.
Is there a problem?
It just sounded like a ghost shouted at me. Anyway, go ahead. It's fine.
Well, hope you're okay. They asked him about how bad their defense is, and he's like, well, it's not all the defense, you know. Like, we're giving up too many points, but, you know.
Fantastic. So if it's not all the defense, is it his fault? I'm confused.
Well, he was implying that, you know, the offense is not doing its job, which is making it harder on the defense. And so Adam Gase has now retorted and said that everybody needs to shut up and play.
And that's totally an Adam Gase response.
And then they go and lose, what, 24-0 to the Dolphins. So yeah, the Jets are. Do the Jets win a game this year?
No, they don't.
Doubt it. Yeah,
I know. Like, who was it? The Dolphins were the team that everybody thought they were going to go winless last year, but they showed signs of being competitive after a few weeks after they got demolished the first couple weeks. The Jets seem to be regressing from being the worst team in the league.
Yeah, like also, even the 2010 Panthers weren't this awful. Like,
yeah,
and you know, there was an SB Nation Reacts question this week: which team is worse? It was this year's Jets, and then the Browns and Lions teams that went winless. And I clicked the Jets faster than anything I've ever voted for on any of those polls, because this is the worst football team I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only thing they have over the Lions and the Browns is that they have Sam Darnold, and they're so bad that Sam Darnold can't even, like, will them to, like, a win or two.
Yeah.
That's how bad they are.
Yeah, the only way I see them winning a game is if late in the year the Patriots, Dolphins, and Bills gather together and conspire, and one of them intentionally loses so they don't get the number one pick. I don't see them win. Like Sam Darnold, like Brian just said, Sam Darnold has some promise. He's got to get away from Adam Gase.
He's literally only really gotten good. Worse. He's only,
yeah, he would he's be really good. He would be a really good piece to build around with somebody like Joe Brady or literally anyone other than Adam Gase. And they traded away or released Le'Veon Bell. And who else do they have? Like, they let Robbie Anderson go in free agency, 'cause I guess they figured, why do we need to give our rookie or second year quarterback or third year quarterback, whatever he is, why do we need to give him a star wide receiver? Like, he doesn't need one of those. So let's just let Robbie Anderson go for peanuts on the free agent market, and then let's get rid of our best player. So, I mean, they're just a train wreck.
Adam Gase does belong in the Finesse Hall of Fame, though. Because he was offensive coordinator for the Broncos for 2 years with Peyton Manning as his quarterback.
And he has ridden that to how many jobs now?
Well, Peyton Manning apparently vouched for him too, which is shit. apparently, like, I guess Peyton was like, oh yeah, he's great. And everyone was like, oh, sounds good. And he's been shit for every team. I think every team he's played, every team he's coached for as the head coach has actually regressed over the top over time with yes. him, which is so, not a good thing. Not a good thing for a head coach.
Let me pull when he took over as offensive coordinator. So he went to the Bears for one season under John Fox, and their offense was I'm messing this up. Their offense was 21st in yards and 23rd in points.
Honestly, I'm surprised it was that good with Adam Gase and John Fox.
John Fox.
yeah. You could have told me, you could have just made it up and said dead last, and I would have believed you.
Yeah. Let me see what it was before that, though. Spending too much time on this, but now I need an answer. What year is this? 2015? So it was 21st in yards, 23rd in points, right? The year before that, they were exactly the same. So he did nothing to help them. 2 years before that, though, they were actually really good. So he did
that was
nothing.
The year they went to the Super Bowl, wasn't it?
2013?
No. It was a couple years before that. A
couple years before that, okay.
There but was yeah, one year where they had Cutler and Marshall, and they were both fucking fantastic.
Yeah,
might have been 2013.
They were second in points and eighth in yards. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, okay.
And their defense was trash. But anyway, since then, and then he got hired after that mediocre season as the offensive coordinator for the Bears. He got hired for the Dolphins. And over time, their offense went in yards 24th, 25th, 31st, you know, straight yeah. down. And then the Jets were like, that guy should be a head coach.
Yeah.
Which is really sad because they played against him twice a fucking season.
I know. Yeah. And watch their offense regress year over year, and they're like, that guy needs to be our next head coach. After we'll hire him, and then we'll hire a general manager that doesn't get to pick his coach. And then with the Jets, they had the 32nd ranked offense last year, and they're 30th, somehow 30th right now, but I'm sure they'll be 32nd by the end of the season. They're last in scoring.
Yeah.
Who's worse than the Jets?
In total offense?
Yeah, right now.
Let's get guesses. Who probably the Washington and
okay,
the Giants?
I would say Washington is at least one of the two. They have to be. I'm gonna go.
I think it's Washington and Giants.
I think it's Washington and who else is awful?
It's the Giants. It's the Washington and the Giants. Oh,
okay. Damn it.
they're actually tied with exactly 1,652 yards each this season. 1,660. Yeah, they're averaging all are averaging 275 yards per game. Total.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
And both of them still have a chance to win their division.
Yep. The NFC East, baby. It's the 2014 NFC South all over again. I love it. I fucking love it.
It's bad. That's probably enough Jets talk. Let's see. Anything else that's the only other like really bad thing that I thought was funny was the Browns lost again. And
yeah,
the Browns
are bad.
They're 4-2 and their two losses are 38-6 and 38-7.
Exactly. They're the worst 4-2 team ever. They're bad.
I need to see them play the Bears.
Yeah.
The sad part is like they have a really good rushing attack and they have a really good defense. So like but it just kind of boggles my mind. Like,
I think
talent
they'll be
wise.
Okay. Yeah.
They're probably going to end up like 8-8 or 9-7.
No, I think they're going to make the playoffs. I just don't think they'll deserve it.
Here's their next five games at Bengals, home against the Raiders, home against the Texans, home against the Eagles, at Jaguars.
Yeah. See, they're going to win four of those games.
And that puts
they'll lose to the Raiders. They'll lose to the Raiders and beat everybody else.
They'll be 8-3 going into a stretch where they play the Titans, Ravens, Giants. God, how did they get so lucky? They put the Giants and Jets in back-to-back weeks.
So they're going to finish 10-6.
Yep. Yes.
You're dead
just
right
based on their schedule. Like, and so you have to add in the Cleveland factor. So because it's Cleveland, they'll finish 8-8 or 9-7.
Yeah,
that's true. They are gonna botch.
They'll probably lose to the Giants and Jets at the end of the year.
They'll probably do something like they did where they beat the Colts pretty soundly. Is they'll like randomly beat like at the Titans or something, or win against the Ravens, get beaten by the Jets or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Browns, you know what's going to happen, because I remember when the Browns went 1-15, they played the Chargers, and I think it was Week 16, and I was like, the Chargers are going to lose this game because the Chargers are absolutely the team to be the one to lose to the Browns.
Yep.
And that's what happened, and the Browns seem destined to do the same thing for the Jets.
Exactly. They're passing the torch.
Yes. The Browns have now become that team that's like good, but also still like laughably bad at certain points.
Yes, yes. They should be America's team.
Let's see.
That was a nice singer, Brad. I like that.
Thank you.
two more things. Brandon McManus shouted out fantasy football players who owned him, which I think is cool. I like it when players are like self-aware and like,
I respect
24.
That.
Jesus Christ. You kicked six field goals. Scored 20.
Yeah, well, yeah, field goals. So, but I like, because every player, all they ever do is talk about how, like, fantasy football and like how it dehumanizes stuff, which valid point, but it is funny. Like, he tweeted a screenshot and it said, shout out to the 4.5% of fantasy owners who started me this week.
Hey, like my greatest Twitter moment of all time was when I tweeted after Graham Gano. I think it was against the Lions back in like 2016, I want to say. But he had like a bunch of field goals and he had a recovered fumble. So he had like 24 points in fantasy. And I tweeted about it and he liked my tweet. I was so happy. I was so
my
happy.
My favorite.
He was
Graham
the only
Gano
person who liked my tweet, by the way. He was the only one.
My favorite Graham Gano memory is when I called him mediocre and he blocked me.
That's a greater accomplishment because he actually noticed it.
I think he's one of those guys that like name searches himself.
Or people Twitter.
Or he has an intern that runs the account for him or whatever. Yeah, but
well, I think Twitter has a lot of stuff. Like, there are a lot of people on Twitter that if they see it, like, I don't know if you have enough of a following to get this, but like, if you were just to tweet Graham Gano without tagging him, a bunch of people would just like reply with his, like, tag him in the comments in the replies, so he'd see the tweet.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So yeah, because people are really cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't say anything that wasn't factual. I called him mediocre. I didn't call him bad. I called him mediocre.
That's so, still an insult to an NFL player, but yeah.
Well, I mean, he is mediocre. I'm sorry.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying from his perspective, that's still an insult. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch the Bills and Chiefs game on Monday afternoon?
I sure did. Yep.
I did not.
That was really cool to have a 5 o'clock like football on the TV when I got home from work. I liked that.
I also enjoyed the fact that Josh Allen passed for like 70 yards throughout the whole game. That was pretty funny.
He was like at 60 something yards before like their last drive where they let the Chiefs basically let him march down the field, and then he followed that up by throwing a pick on their next one.
Of course.
Josh Allen experience. Yep.
But there was a couple minutes span where I just felt like I was, because I kind of had it on in the background, and it just felt like I was watching a Panthers game because they were like, oh, Josh Norman with the pass defense, and it's like the next play is like, yeah, Vernon Butler with the pressure. And then AJ Klein makes the tackle, and it's just like,
yeah.
I have a funny story about that. So yeah. I know that we make fun of the Bills for being Panthers North, but so my cousin's husband is a major Bills fan, and like, shout out to Brendan if you happen to be listening to this one. He probably isn't, but still, he like major Bills fan, knows a whole lot about the team, like, you know, like very intelligent, very, very realistic. But I kept texting him every time I saw a Panthers player, and I was like, Jesus Christ, you have 7 players on the defense. And because they had Dean Marlowe, they had Vernon Butler, they had Klein, obviously, Mario Addison, Josh Norman. I think I saw a couple other names that were like on special teams who were defensive players, and yeah, I like texted him every time. And my brother hit him with the biggest. He hit us with a double burn, and it was great. He was like, "Oh, you have so many Panthers players. That's why your defense has regressed so much." And it was like,
Dean Marlowe plays for the Bills.
He sure does.
Like, he was actually on the field.
He was playing special teams.
Yeah, he actually has been playing. Like, I think he just didn't want to play here because he's missed a lot of time since.
Yeah, because like he would always get hurt on like the third day of training camp with us, like every year.
Yep.
Yeah, we went through this. I don't remember if it was in the off season, But the Bills have like 20 Panthers on their roster.
Yeah, we did do that. I remember that because we tried to figure out who all they were.
Yeah, yeah, we played that. And you guys did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Most of them are on the defense because I'm looking through right now. And
I'm surprised Josh Norman was able to resume his career after Derrick Henry almost ended it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I said that to Brendan as well. Yeah, I said I'm surprised that Josh Norman's on the field after Derrick Henry took his soul from him.
The last thing, I think Dak Prescott should win MVP.
Oh yes,
probably. That Cardinals Cowboys game was so horrifying to watch.
Well, that aside, Dak Prescott is still leading the league in passing yards.
Yeah,
and he didn't play last 2 weeks now.
He got hurt. I think the first half of their game last week.
But he's still leading the league in passing yards.
Yeah, so he's missed a game and a half, and he's still leading the league in passing. And then their offense is like, oh, they got all these weapons, da da da. And then Andy Dalton comes in, and they get 10 points against the Cardinals. It's like, oh, well, maybe Dak has been doing more than we thought.
John, yeah. You'll enjoy this too, but I was watching the Blogging the Boys Twitter handle tweeting about how they need to stop running on second and long like the whole game.
Did you guys see, I know you saw it because I think Brad, you shared it with us. Now the Cowboys are already getting sick of Mike McCarthy and Mike.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up in as the last thing we talk about in this segment, because yeah, the Cowboys are already getting tired of Mike McCarthy, and someone even said they're obviously unnamed players, but somebody has already said he has no idea what he's doing.
Shocking after he lied on his job application.
Yeah.
And just like hoodwinked Jerry Jones into giving him a job.
So sounds like that Aaron Rodgers may have been on to something.
I knew Mike McCarthy wasn't a great coach in Green Bay, but I did not realize how just like shady of a person he is. He basically lied his way into the Cowboys job. Yeah, and
he essentially is stealing money from Jerry Jones.
Yeah. Very unapologetically, too.
Yeah, and based on how the Jason Garrett thing went, he's going to be there for at least 5 years.
I don't know about that, but we'll see.
No, Jerry Jones believes in Mike McCarthy. I can almost guarantee you.
I don't know, though. When you're having a mutiny 6 weeks into your first season on the job, I don't know how long you can keep that around.
And they're all stressed out about Dak. It'll be fine.
And they're massively underperforming because everybody – like, Cowboys were pretty hyped coming into the season. I picked Dak to be, like, the MVP when we did that tally side thing at the beginning of the season. And that's gone down the drain. And I know their defense isn't stocked with talent, but they're like the worst defense ever.
Yeah, their defense is really bad. Like really, really bad. It's almost amazing. Like it's amazing because like it's not like they don't really have it's like they have talent on that defense. It's not like they don't, and they really need to sign Earl Thomas at some point. But
I'm kind of surprised they haven't, to be honest.
Yeah. That's exactly a Cowboys thing to do too.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
You're in desperation and you just sign a big flashy name, and in a position that's kind of like a luxury position in a sense.
Yeah, it does nothing for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think peak Earl Thomas is probably good enough to make a difference back there, but like.
But
I
Earl
don't
Thomas
know
is
if,
fighting with his teammates in Baltimore. No.
And I don't know if. They have the staff and the scheme in place to really they have. Because I don't think Mike Nolan has been particularly good anywhere either.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, I really enjoy the meme of the Dallas Cowboys being America's team and over the last like decade always being disappointing. Like all the time. It's great. I love it.
Mike Nolan has had...
He was in San Francisco for a while, and they were terrible when he was there, but they didn't have much talent.
He had a good defense. He's had a top 10 defense 3 times in 22 years as a defensive coordinator.
Pretty good. It's pretty good batting percentage, you know, baseball stuff, right?
Yeah, great. 4 times. 4 times in yards and 5 times in points. He had a top 10 defense in 22 years. So sounds like a guy you want to keep giving a job. And then he's been bad for a while.
We all have our off days, you know.
For the record, if you are successful 3 times in 22 attempts, you have a .136 batting average. That is decidedly not good in baseball. Just so we're clear.
I think the message here, or the lesson here between Adam Gase and Mike Nolan, is if your first impression is good, you can ride that for your entire life.
You know what, because I think we should do? And this is kind of a John Boyce type experiment, but we should have an NFL team with Adam Gase and Mike Nolan as the offensive and defensive coordinators.
We just got to find a head coach.
Oh, it's got to be John Fox.
Okay. Because Mike Nolan was in his first year as defensive coordinator for the Giants way back in 1993. They were first in points allowed and fifth in yards allowed, and then they just got worse like every year since then. And he's been
he peaked too early.
Case where it's like he came in and was really good as Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator. That was his first exposure in that role, and he's just ridden that out for several years. And he probably will keep getting coordinator jobs and like quarterback coaches jobs until he wants to retire.
Yeah. Of course.
Because the NFL, you
know, don't give the young hotshot guy that may be good a chance. Let's just go with somebody we know.
This is the lesson from CSR out here, folks. Build that resume. That resume will carry you places.
Exactly.
You don't actually have to be good at your, like, just do something successful early.
Yes, do something successful early, and then on your resume, you need to type that out.
Putting that on there. Yeah.
Yep, and type it out in larger font and make it bold. You'll be fine. You'll make tons of money.
Yep. You know, now that I think about it, I think Mike Nolan and Adam Gase as coordinators would be funnier if we give them a really good head coach.
like
Andy Reid or somebody.
Just the internal strife of
just to see what would happen.
It would be a sitcom.
Yes.
Like, we could just be like, okay, Andy, you're the head coach, but you cannot change the game plans.
Yeah, you can assist, you can do your coaching duties, but you cannot install anything, and you cannot call the plays on either side of the ball.
Yeah, you have to let them do their jobs.
You
can
kill
control
Andy
who's on the field.
Yeah,
but
he would literally have a heart attack.
You would literally kill him.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, do we have anything else we want to discuss?
No, I think we should probably talk about the Saints.
Yeah, let's talk about the Saints. All right,
going to be quick because we're going to lose.
Well, yeah, well, we'll take a quick break and we'll discuss the Saints game. So stay tuned. And we're back. Time to talk about the Saints. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as big of a disaster as it has been with Ron.
No, it won't be a disaster, but we're going to lose.
And oh, yes, absolutely. I believe we're going to lose, but I don't think we're going to get beat 42-10 again.
No, I don't
think so either. This game doesn't look nearly as intimidating now as it did at the start of the season and as it did in years past, because the Saints don't look like the juggernaut they had the last couple of years.
No, Drew Brees is losing it. Michael Thomas might get in a fight with somebody if they call him Slant Man in practice and get benched. So, I mean, Sean Payton is continuing his obsession with playing Taysom Hill for whatever reason. So we have a shot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the formula, at least last season and into this season, has been them leaning on Alvin Kamara. And if Michael Thomas plays, they'll lean on him too, which all I think they really need is Dante Jackson to call him a running back the whole game, and that should trigger him. but it's what worries me the most is that I don't think they're going to have as much success getting after Drew Brees, and that's where I could see it being a problem. I don't know if you guys agree or not.
Dink and I agree with you. He's gonna exploit zone and like zone coverages and openings on the field all day. That's what he does best.
I think he'll. I think he's gonna like we're gonna shut him down, but the pass defense has been pretty good, especially when you consider how much we've struggled getting pressure consistently. And Drew Brees, 2020 Drew Brees is not going to like shred your defense anymore.
No, he's starting to show that he's 40 years old.
Yes, he's fallen off a lot. He's doing, I heard somebody's like, the thing he used to do where he would get up on his tippy toes and like rear back to throw these beautiful deep balls, he's doing to throw like 5 yards out now. 5 yard outs now.
So he's gonna have a bounce back game.
Of course. He's gonna throw for 500 yards. I mean that's
well, he does have Michael Thomas back, which I think has hurt them.
As long as nobody hurts his feelings.
Yes, as long as like Brian said, that might be the game plan to stop Michael Thomas going forward, is just to say like to challenge him to do something different. Like say like you can't beat me deep or something, and then he's going to try to prove you wrong because he's super sensitive. But then Drew Brees can't throw it to him, so out of the play.
That's a solid strategy.
Thanks, man. But yeah, so I feel like it's going to be one of those games where it's really frustrating to watch because Drew Brees is going to complete like 80% of his passes, but he's going to average like 7 yards of completion.
Yeah.
I think the big problem is going to be the defensive line for the Saints. I think that because they actually have been pretty good as far as like rushing the passer.
Yeah. And also considering our offensive line is quarantined.
Was missing the entire offensive line.
Yeah.
But the counter to that is that Cam Jordan doesn't have Cam Newton to hit, because I always felt like Cam Jordan took extra pride in going after Cam Newton.
Oh, and there's the other factor we haven't even considered is the Teddy Roosevelt revenge game.
Ooh, you're right.
That's a spicy thing. I forgot about that. Teddy Bridgewater's going to come out swinging.
We got the Joe spicy. Brady revenge game, too.
Oh shit! We got two revenge games.
I was gonna say the Keith Kirkwood revenge game, but
no, Keith Kirkwood got hurt. Maybe Keith Kirkwood got hurt because he didn't want to have a revenge game. He didn't want to.
That's what it was. He's like, "Oh, doctor, my clavicle, I can't do it." And they're like, "It looks fine." He's like, "Ah, no, it's hurt.
It's a hairline fracture, sir."
I know my body. Clavicle is hurt.
The customer is always right.
But as far as the defense goes, the nice thing is that
Marshawn Lattimore?
Marshawn Lattimore, there we go.
One of those names. Same player.
Guy, yeah.
he can only cover one of the Panthers receivers. That's good for them.
Well, the bad news, though, is that he will cover Robbie Anderson, and that is the only one that Teddy Bridgewater can throw to.
He threw to DJ Moore just fine.
Or DJ Moore a little bit, but... You know, DJ
you need
Mike.
A little bit.
DJ Moore got targeted 11 times on Sunday.
He did, and he caught 5 passes. So
yeah, that wasn't good. Well, he was, which I felt like DJ's had some dropsies this year. But I think most of them were
DJ's fault. But there were 2 or 3 of them that he had no shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the one of the two was the one in the end zone where he kind of like. The defender fell in front of him, and I'm sure he was expecting it to get tipped, and it didn't get tipped. And
yeah,
which is like you should catch it, but like nobody will acknowledge that those are hard to catch. But it's really hard to catch a ball when you expect it to get tipped and it doesn't.
Yeah, it's hard to. It's like when a ball is coming at you like that as a receiver, former wide receiver here, just saying. When a ball is coming at you, especially on a timing route like that, like you're kind of trying to predict where the ball is going to go. And as soon as a defender flashes in front of you, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to have to go try and catch the tip. And when that doesn't happen, it just hits you in the face and you're like, well, fuck. So
yeah, like
it does happen.
Yeah. You're waiting. You're ready to react to where the ball goes when it changes directions, but it never does. And it just goes straight at you and it gets there faster than you're expecting. And so, yeah,
yep.
Right in the face. But yeah, so I mean,
Curtis Samuel would have caught it.
As long as you don't put it in his body, if he's asked to reach for it, he'll catch it. But I'm not. Yeah, I think DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, I feel like, are 1A, 1B at this point. Robbie gets more of the targets, but DJ plays more of the snaps. So I guess like technically on the depth chart, DJ Moore is still the number one receiver.
I also think it has to do with that Bridgewater had a lot more chemistry with Robbie Anderson from having practiced with him so much with the Jets.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't have, like, he didn't have, like, any of that with DJ Moore, where now I think they're starting to find their timing. And I think they're still trying to find it, because, like, for example, there was the one throw where Moore had to try and make a really acrobatic catch on a ball that was thrown behind him. Those are the kind of things where over time, they'll get better. So, yeah, I think the 1A, 1B take is correct. And I think that he kind of leaned on Anderson just because he had a better feel for who he was as a route runner. Because that's the thing about the NFL. Like, even though there's so much, like, technical aspects to it and timing and whatnot, like, what it really boils down to when it comes to receivers, and this is why you see, like, backup quarterbacks who find that one wide receiver, like, why are they throwing it to him when they have, like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins or a top receiver? It's because they know the timing with them. Like, those two have, like, a connection as far as when the guy's going to break, when he's going to be looking for the ball, and when the quarterback's going to throw it. So that's something where Robbie Anderson has that, DJ Moore doesn't.
Yeah, it's just chemistry.
Yep.
And there's also, and then the timing, and then, like, a trust factor, and just the comfort with, like, I've done this a lot. Like, I know you're going to catch the ball if I throw it to you. I know it seems simple, but I think there's this comfort of, like, when you've seen a player catch your passes a lot, that you're comfortable with them catching your passes, even if they're not as talented as another player on the team.
Well, on top of that, like, every wide receiver is going to break differently on a different route. Like, yeah, some are going to round it off. Like, I've seen, like, DJ Moore is more of a round off type guy. Like, some guys are going to break a little faster out of it, where some guys aren't. Some guys are going to plant somewhere else, like maybe a yard ahead. Like, you know, those little nuances cause major problems when it comes to a quarterback and wide receiver connection. So that's why Robbie Anderson has been good and will still continue to be good, but DJ Moore definitely building that connection. You saw it this weekend, and you've been seeing it over the course of the season.
Yeah, and Robbie Anderson just surprisingly good in general, like we've talked about pretty much every week at this point.
Who let him go, by the way?
the worst Jets. Franchise Smurf in the Jet. NFL.
J-E-T-S, baby. Jets, Jets, Jets.
Alvin Kamara is somebody else we should probably talk about. It felt like last year he kind of lost his mojo a little bit. This year he looks like the Alvin Kamara of 2 years ago, where he just, like, he looks slippery and players just bounce off of him, and he doesn't break stride, and he looks impossible to tackle.
Dude has some of the craziest balance I've ever seen in a running back.
Yeah, it's so weird, because it's kind of hard to explain, because it's like he just runs and players just, like, run into him and fall down, and he just keeps running. And I've never seen anyone like that.
Yeah, it's almost like colliding with rubber sometimes when I've seen him try to get, when people, like, because I've seen Thomas Davis tackle running backs a million times, but for some reason he had so much of an issue with Alvin Kamara. Like,
yeah, and he doesn't, like, he's not like McCaffrey, where McCaffrey, like, finds space and jukes people out and makes defenders whiff. Like, Kamara just, like, lets people hit him, and he just keeps going. But he's not, like, strong. He just kind of, like, I don't know. It's just really weird to watch, but it's kind of fascinating.
He's wiry.
That's honestly a pretty good description.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best backs in the league. And somebody on this podcast, I don't remember who it was, a couple of years ago, suggested the Panthers should draft him.
I wonder who that was.
Yeah, I don't remember, but he has a lot of good takes.
By the way, with Kamara, more so than the running, he's averaging over 7 catches a game this season.
Yeah, so I think that's where New Orleans is going to really wear us out. Is they're going to Drew Brees is going to target Kamara like 12 times, and he's going to catch 10 of those for probably 80 to 120 yards.
So he had 4 targets against the Lions 2 weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago. And so he caught 3 of those 4 targets for 36 yards. Every other game, he had 10 targets, 74 yards, 14 targets, 139 yards, 9 targets, 95 yards, and 8 targets, 51 yards.
Yeah, so we're going to get something like that.
Yeah, he's going to get, yeah. like that, maybe 10 to 12. I think you probably go down to 8 to 10 because Thomas will be back. So yeah, probably 8 to 10 targets, and he's pretty consistently averaging about 10 yards per catch. So
yeah, anywhere from 75 to 120 yards.
Yeah.
And at least one touchdown.
That'll be really fun because I know I personally love watching Drew Brees drop back to pass and then just throwing it to Alvin Kamara for 2 yards down the field for a 10-yard gain, which I know we do to teams all the time now too, because that's what Teddy Bridgewater does with Mike Davis, but it's not as fun when it's happening against your team.
Yeah. It's even more fun when you have perfect coverage on all of their wide receivers and it's third down.
It's third down.
And as a third party watching
his running back.
And as a third party watching, and you're like, he's going to throw it to Kamara. Like, you just know it. And he's
still yeah. yeah.
Like, we're not NFL defenders, and we can be like, oh, he's going to throw it to Kamara, and he does. And we're just like, damn it, after he gets the first down every time.
Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be very mentally prepared for that. It's a shame that McCaffrey isn't playing, because I'm sure Fox would have so many graphics with the two of them, right, and like comparisons and stuff.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they, you know, same draft class, right? Yeah, because somebody had that take. Same draft class, same like, you know, dual threat capabilities.
Yeah. Just imagine what a team could do if they had McCaffrey and Kamara.
That's kind of insane.
Yeah, I don't really know. Yeah, that'd be creative, which I guess we have that now. But
yeah, Ron Rivera would have just.
Oh God, yeah, Ron. It would have been ruined with Ron Rivera.
It would have just been like a running back one, running back two. It's just like, oh
yeah,
it's just dash and dash.
Yeah,
McCaffrey gets a break. We put in Kamara and vice versa. There's no like.
It's third down, Kamara. You're up. You're the third down running back.
Exactly. And then yeah, and it's like, oh, let's get exotic and put one of them. Let's put both of them on the field at the same time, three times a game. To really confuse the defense.
One of them's just blocking for the other, too.
In the first quarter.
Yeah. They'll line both of them up in the backfield, and they'll just do like a play action to one and then toss it to the other. It's like, got them. Used both of them in the same play.
For 3 yards.
Yeah.
On 3rd and 8.
That's,
I'm not bitter about Ron Rivera at all.
No. I know.
Not at all.
There have been a couple times that, and this might be surprising because we do talk about that era a lot, but like I make notes about like what to talk about in the around the NFL stuff, and it's just like, should I complain about Ron Rivera this week? Let's take a week off on the Ron Rivera thing, because I'm sure people get tired of hearing it.
Yeah,
but it comes up sometimes. It just happens, you know. Still finds a way to make it its way into our the past still finds a way to make its way into our conversations.
Sorry about that.
Is it the ghost?
Yeah, it was the ghost. I had to ward it off real quick. So, yeah, do we have any other takes we want to discuss about the Saints-Panthers game? Aside from scoring?
Just score predictions, I think.
Yeah, cool.
Sounds good to me.
All right, John, give us your score prediction.
I think I haven't made a single one right this year. Like, in terms of, like, the wins and loss predictions. No, I don't know. At the beginning, I think I picked the Panthers lose. Anyway, Saints 28, Panthers 2020 points for the Panthers.
Nice.
28-20.
Brad, what about you?
I am going to say Saints 31, Panthers 23.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember to factor a lot of field goals into my projections because we.
Yeah, same here. Like we're gonna stall in the red zone at least twice, and have to kick field goals. But I mean, like, I don't think we're gonna get blown. I don't think this is gonna be like the Kyle Allen game was last year.
Nah, that was horrible.
But I also don't think we're good enough to beat the Saints yet.
I'm predicting Saints 21, Panthers 16.
That's low scoring.
That's a low score. Yeah, I don't think we'll hold the Saints to less than 30 points. But I hope if we're going to lose no matter what, Brian, I hope you're correct.
I think the Panthers defense will show up and I also think they're going to throw something different at them now that Justin Burris is out. So I think that the fact that that's not, because they've been running the whole three safety defense the entire year, I don't think they're going to take one of the two guys that they just signed and put them on the field 100% of the snaps. So I think they're going to throw something different at them schematically. And I think that'll throw them off because they won't have film on it. So that's my take on it. But I still think the Saints will win because it's the Saints and they always beat the Panthers, but maybe they'll have a chance later in the season. We'll see, but who knows?
And the Saints, I think, are going to have fans.
Yeah, like 3,000 fans.
The dome is going to be rocking.
Yeah.
Rocking. Get those megaphones out there. Well, I guess thanks for checking us out for the Keep Sounding podcast prior to the first Panthers and Saints game. Obviously, check out the B&B reaction show after the game and check out our pregame and postgame coverage on CSR, on Twitter, and on Facebook at Cat Scratch Reader. And from all of us here at the Keep Sounding podcast, this is Brian, Brad, and John. We'll talk to you next week. And hopefully you guys all stay safe, stay healthy, and enjoy the football game.
See you
later.